Blog Talk Radio.
And all access football exclusive.
And welcome everybody to another edition of the NFL's Draft Digest Show. We're back at it again. I'm your host, Daniel Mogliano. With me is the Reverend Ralph Mancini, and today is the Offensive Line Preview Show with special guest, potential top 10 pick, Anthony Costanzo, left tackle out of Boston College, as well as Wisconsin's John Moffitt, coming out of that offensive line factory that the Badgers continue to produce year in and year out, one of the top interior linemen in this guard. In this draft, Ralph, thanks for joining me today. I know talking offensive line is one of your favorite things to do come draft time.
Yeah, it is, because I think it's obviously the most underappreciated position in football. A lot of guys, a lot of people, a lot of fans don't notice these guys, but it's extremely important to have a quality offensive line, to have a good offense. You know, a lot of running backs, a lot of quarterbacks, they can only flourish or only be as good as those front five guys protecting them.
Yeah, it's definitely where the game begins, in the trenches. You got to have those big uglies up there doing work. Otherwise, you know, it might not matter how great and fancy your skill tools are. You can have all these great toys in the backfield and on the perimeter, but if the O-line doesn't do their job, it makes it a lot more difficult for everyone else to do theirs. So definitely it's a key thing. I know fans out there, I know you don't get excited when your team drafts a first-round pick, you know, from the offensive line. That's not the guy that's going to make you want to go out and get a jersey. But you know what? It might be the guy that makes your team a better football team down the road and makes those exciting players better players and allows them to do what they can do. Well, Ralph, even though overall the offensive line isn't a glamorous position, you know, the one position that has become a little bit of a glamour spot is that left tackle spot that everybody covets so much, and they're definitely paid like glamour type players. So we're going to start there, and let's start with the top two. You know what I mean? I think there's a pretty close consensus as to who the number one and number two guys. How they're ordered, though, is a little bit up in the air. And I'm talking about our future guest coming up in about a half an hour, Anthony Costanzo, senior left tackle out of Boston College. Or is it Tyron Smith out of USC? Ralph, I think what we're talking here is I think Costanzo is the safer pick. Smith is the kid with the higher ceiling. Which direction do you go with when, debating these two guys?
Yeah, as you mentioned, left tackle is the glamour position. These are the guys that are going to be going up against those athletic speed rushers. And, you know, in turn, these left tackles have to be a little bit more athletic than a lot of the other offensive linemen on that front five on that line. And my number one guy is Anthony Costanzo. I mean, not only was he a senior starter, or he was a four-year starter in college, a team captain, has ideal size at 6'7", 312 pounds. He has a large frame, long arms, and big hands. And what really stands out about him is his ability to position himself in pass protection with the way he shuffles his feet. He's also good at getting to the second level. He's an aggressive run blocker as well. Overall, he's just a very smart guy. He works hard at improving himself. I think that this is the type of guy you could start from day one, and if he stays healthy, here's a guy that could be your left tackle for the next 12 to 14, maybe 15 years. The other guy, Tyron Smith, I mean, to me, he has unbelievable measurables. I think he's more of a boom or bust type in comparison to Anthony Costanzo. But, you know, when you take a look at Tyron Smith, his measurables are just through the roof. 37-inch arms, 11-inch hands, superior body control. He's a natural knee bender. He has the agility to slide and mirror and recover when a defender does get a step on him. But, you know, the biggest thing working against him, I think, is his lack of experience at left tackle. Here's a guy that in college at USC was predominantly a right tackle. And then the other thing about him that can be perceived as a weakness or at least a question mark is his size. He did put on 25 pounds after the season, but the question is, will he be able to keep that weight? But, you know, other than that, when you take into account his athleticism, his competitive spirit. This kid does play to the whistle. I mean, he is, I think, potentially a star in the making, just like Costanzo is.
Well, Rev, I'm on board with you on both guys. I have Costanzo as my number one guy, 6'7", 311 pounds, 28 bench press, looked very good at the combine in terms of the agility. I think he's very polished. I think he's an instinctive player. I think he has superb awareness. He knows what's going on in terms of reading what the other team is doing. He's got very good feet. He can move laterally well enough to stop the speed rush. I think the only thing there is he could get a little stronger. You know, I like to see him to be,
yeah.
I like to see Anthony be a little more physical, particularly in the run game. You know, Rev, I don't know if you agree with that or not.
No, I agree with that wholeheartedly. And as a matter of fact, he'll probably tell you that, you know, the one thing he's been working on throughout the offseason is just, you know, how to play with his hands a little bit better, how to be a little bit more physical. He does have all the qualities to be that premium run blocker as well as being a great pass blocker. So the guy has gotten a little bit bigger in the offseason, and he's well aware of, you know, where his deficiencies lie.
And he's a good kid, too. He's a good kid. He's a smart kid. He's somebody
mm-hmm.
we've both spoken to. You did a player spotlight with him. I met him back in December in New York among those William Campbell nominees. So he's a really bright kid. And, you know, just throwing it out there, Mike Sherrod was there as well, as was Nate Soldier. So obviously offensive line, these are some bright guys we're talking about. And Tyron Smith, yeah, he put on a lot of weight. You know, he was listed as 280 by USC on their roster, 307 at the combine. Great, great arm length. I mean, we're talking 36 3/8 arm lengths and over 84-inch wingspan. Physically, I don't think this kid could really be much more impressive. He's got quick feet. He seems to be a natural knee bender. You know, he's got all of that stuff. He just needs, you know, he's kind of raw right now. You know, he's not very instinctive. He's kind of raw. He's still learning the position. He's only 20 years old. As you mentioned, played right tackle at USC, so he's not really experienced at left tackle. He did put on that weight, and he did move well at the combine, but we haven't seen him play at that weight yet, and we really haven't seen him play much left tackle. So I think, you know, there's a lot greater upside with Smith. He could end up being a guy, you know, when you redo this draft, that teams would say, well, he should have gone second or third. But as you mentioned, you know, higher ceiling also comes with a lower floor when comparing these two players.
Yeah, I mean, and a lot of times, you know, beauty's in the eye of the beholder. I mean, do you need a tackle to step in right now from day one? You know, if you're a team out there that's not very good and doesn't have very good offensive linemen, you might need a tackle with a little bit of experience at that position to step in from day one and contribute. If that's the case, then you would want to go with Costanzo. But if you're with a team that's already, well-stocked at that position, already has a good offensive line, and maybe has a veteran that can hold on for another year or two, you might want to take a Tyron Smith and develop him for a year or two and then plug him in when he's ready to go.
Well, Ralph, that's kind of why I had Costanzo going in my mock draft to Dallas, because I think that's a team that really needs to address the offensive line. They ignored it last year. I would have loved to see them take Brewer, who did a great job with the Rams. I understand, though, taking Dez Bryant, it's hard to knock that pick, even though it looks a little shakier now than it did on draft day. But at the same time, I think that's a team that needs to address that position. And if they're a win-now team, and we know Jerry, in Jerry's world, they're always a win-now team, I think Costanzo makes more sense for them. All right, Rev, how about beyond those top two? Like I said, they're kind of the consensus top two guys. Who's the number three guy off the board, in your opinion? Or let's say better, who do you think is the third best tackle in this group?
Yeah, you can go in a lot of different directions here, but the guy I went with was Derek Sherrod. I mean, you talk about a prototypical dancing bear who's light on his feet. He just has exceptional balance. He's a guy that fires off the snap, maintains great balance in pass protection because of the way he bends his knees. You know, some people knock him because he's not the most physical drive blocker out there. They would like to see him flash a little bit more of a mean streak and finish off his blocks. But, you know, the guy, he does block on the move, even against the run, and he sustains his blocks. I have no doubt that he will develop into a more physical blocker down the road, given his competitive spirit and his overall character. To me, I think, again, what really stands out to me are his feet, his balance, the way he bends his knees. Sometimes he just looks like a ballerina out there. You know, you would never guess that this guy's as big as he is. So to me, he is the number three guy for sure.
Rev, I'm with you there. It's not always fun when me and you agree. It's a little better when it gets heated and we kind of battle a little bit, but I like him. Yeah, I think he's a left tackle. I know some people question that, but I love his footwork. I think he's got great lateral quickness. I think he needs to improve on handling the bull rush from the opposition. That's where he can get a little bit vulnerable, but he plays very hard. He's a really smart kid. Like I said, he's one of those other kids that was there in New York for that William Campbell, the academic Heisman. He understands schemes very well. He's probably a better zone blocker, I think, at this point in his career, especially in the running game. He's not the type of guy that's going to be a mauler and just demolish people one-on-one. But another kid with that big length, 6 feet 5 inches, 321 pounds, over 35-inch long arms, and 11-inch hands. So, boy, man, you don't want to let this kid get his mitts on you, because it's game over once he does. All right, Rob, I think we're hand in hand, 1, 2, 3. Typically, though, there's going to be more than three offensive tackles going in the first round. So any other guys out there who you think are going to be first-round picks come this Thursday?
Well, typically you do have a lot of offensive tackles, particularly left tackles, that go in the first round. And a lot of people are talking about, perhaps Nate Solder going into that first round as well. There's some questions I have about him. To me, I think the fourth guy off the board should be Gabe Kareemi out of Wisconsin. He is just a huge mountain of a man at 6'7", 314 pounds, has 35-inch arms. I mean, here's another guy with great balance. He maintains a nice wide base. He's a very hard worker. He stepped up in big games as well, by keeping guys like Cameron Hayward and Adrian Claiborne in check. He does get a little too upright in his stance, and he may have some problems with athletic speed rushers at left tackle, and that's why I think ultimately he's a right tackle at the next level. I think his biggest strength is he's just an excellent overall run blocker with the way he gets underneath people's pads and just drives them back. So if you're looking at him as a right tackle, I think this guy is just a natural at that position.
Yeah, without a doubt, Rev, a natural at that position. He's the best run blocker in this draft. Not only does he have a tremendously powerful upper body at 29 bench reps at the combine, but he's a very good technician. He knows what he's doing there. He understands assignments well. He knows how to pick up blitzes. He's tough. He's physical. And as you mentioned, the 83-inch wingspan, so he's got the length that you look for. But one question is the lateral agility. Can he handle that as a left tackle? I think while I believe his best position will be right tackle, I do think his pass protection is kind of underrated, because he did do a solid job against a lot of the best defensive ends in the country, and he didn't get a lot of help in that manner. So he's been respectable. He's been good against good players one-on-one on an island. Now, as for Nate Solder, intriguing kid, 6'8", 319 pounds. You obviously can't teach that. The arm length is good, but not great. 35.5 inches, 81-inch wingspan, so it's solid. But even though he's about 4 or 5 inches taller than a lot of these other guys, his arm length is about the same, maybe even a little shorter. Small hands, too, only 9 and 7/8 inches for his hands. So he's got small hands, but he moves pretty well for a guy his size. A 4.34 shuttle time for an offensive tackle, especially a kid that's 6'8", is extremely impressive. But he's not, he's not a great bender, whether it be his knee bend or his waist bend. That's a real big concern, and especially at that height, which really allows him to get overpowered by people. So he really needs to get stronger, both in his lower body and his upper body. But he is a smart player. He does read defense as well, and as I said, he has excellent agility. He started his career as a tight end. He's got that movement where he can probably handle speed rushers. He can get to the linebackers to the second level as a pull blocker. But I think what really concerns me is him getting overpowered by guys, guys that can play with leverage, even like a smaller guy. You know, you think of a Dwight Freeney as somebody that would try to go around him. I think a Freeney would get low on him and try to just push him back. So I think he really needs to improve on both his lower body strength and upper body strength. But, you know, a lot of upside here when it comes to Solder.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head with Solder. I mean, he is very athletic, a legitimate 6'8". But he plays too tall a lot of times, and I think he doesn't bend enough. And also, I think he needs to make better use of his hands as well. So, you know, here's a case where, yeah, he does come in with great size, but that great size, that great length a lot of times plays against him.
All right, you're listening to the NFL Draft Bible's Draft Digest Show. We are previewing the offensive line. Coming up later in the show is one, Anthony Costanzo, who we spoke about, both of our number one tackles, as well as John Moffitt, one of the better interior linemen into this draft, most likely a second, third-round pick, somebody in that range, probably a day two guy. Ralph, what's your best? Who are your best of the rest guys? We touched upon most of the guys who either will be first-round picks or could be first-round picks. I think all five myself, I think, are going to make it into the first round, but who's part of that next group for you that you know that you favor?
Well, you know, two guys jump out at me. Number one, Orlando Franklin out of the U, a very physical guy, perhaps maybe the most physical blocker, second to Kareem here. He just drives guys into the ground. He's a tough guy. He plays through pain. He's versatile enough to play at tackle and at guard. I mean, he might not be flexible enough to play on the blind side, on the left side, but I think he's definitely a right tackle at the next level. And as big and tough and mean as he is, he's also pretty light on his feet for a guy who's 6 feet, 5.5 inches, 316 pounds. Then another guy that I think not enough people talk about is Marcus Gilbert out of the University of Florida. I think this guy does a great job of walling off defenders and pass protection. He offers a great deal of length, strength, and versatility to play either on the left side or the right side. Overall, he's just a very athletic guy. I think that he can get out into space. He can pull. He's not your classic drive blocker, but I think he has the physical tools to get much better at the pro level. So, yeah, I would say Franklin and Gilbert are my best of the rest guys.
All right, not bad choices there, Rev. I'm going to throw a couple of guys out there as well in terms of being guys that could go in the second round. You know, some guys that maybe could even sneak into the first round if you look at some people's mock drafts. I like James Vu, the kid out of Indiana. I don't think he's good as Roger Saffold, who I was really, really high on this time last year. But, you know, big kid, 6'6", over 320 pounds. He's got the arm length that you're looking for. He's a strong kid. Very good quickness, you know, not a great athlete, but good feet and good quickness. But he's a little too inconsistent. You know, at times he can dominate people. At times he can get pushed back where the defensive line is dominating him. So he needs to clean up his game. I know you texted me he's kind of raw, and I agree. You know, he's inconsistent. He needs to work on his technique. Right now I think he's better suited to being into a man-to-man scheme. So zone teams I don't think are going to be looking at him. Then you have Ben Agyelana out of Villanova, a little short at 6'3", but 36-inch long arms with an over 83-inch wingspan. So he's got the feet, he's got the quickness, the mobility, and the arm length that you look for in an offensive tackle, but he does need to get stronger, and he needs to get more physical and get nastier. And, you know, that's a big question mark for me because he didn't even play at an elite level. Now, did he not show that mean streak because it was just easy for him because he was that much better than the talent he played against at Villanova? Or is that just not part of his game? Because if that's not part of his game, that'll be a concern because he's making a heck of a step up, and the guys he's going up against in the NFL are going to be a lot meaner and nastier than he did in that conference for Villanova. And then you have Marcus Cannon. Go ahead, Rev.
I'm sorry. He's definitely a project. To me, he's more of a project.
And, you know, and I think my next two guys, Marcus Cannon and James Carpenter, all similar guys in are they tackles, are they guards. Marcus Cannon is 6'5", over 350 pounds, 33 bench press. So tremendous strength we're talking about, but he's also raw. I mean, but when he plays with the proper technique, out of these players, he's probably right behind Kareemi in terms of being a dominant run blocker, but I think he's a project as well. I think he's got a little bit of a ways to go, particularly if he's going to end up being a tackle. I think both of these guys might be better off starting their NFL careers as guards and maybe kicking out later on as they develop more. His 34-inch arms are a little bit concerned. That's somewhat short. The same for James Carpenter out of Alabama. He played left tackle there. Kind of an inconsistent player, although he improved a lot during his senior season. Junior college transfer, struggled a lot as a junior, didn't really play at the elite level many expected, but he does have good feet. I think if he continues to get stronger and continues to work on his technique, which he did last year, he could be a sleeper. Rev, what do you think of these three guys, Agilon out of Villanova, Marcus Cannon from TCU, and James Carpenter out of Alabama? We got a big school kid, a mid-major kid, and a small school kid. Where do you think they project, and do you think they're going to be guards or tackles at the next level?
Well, Agilon, I think he might be better off starting off at guard, as you said, because he is so raw and because of his level of competition. You know, Cannon is an interesting guy. I mean, to me, I've seen him, and he didn't always impress me. Not the most athletic guy out there. He is physical, though. And Carpenter, I think Carpenter is a guy who he hasn't always impressed me with his run blocking. I think he's a good pass blocker. But I think out of all those three guys that you mentioned, I think Carpenter is the guy that I would probably be most comfortable with if I had to draft a tackle somewhere in those mid-rounds.
All right, you're listening to the NFL Draft Bibles Draft Digest show. We're breaking down the offensive tackles. This is our O-line preview show coming up in under 10 minutes. Will be Anthony Costanzo from the University of Boston College. Well, I guess it's not the university, right? It is Boston College. Excuse me for that. But, Rev, you know, we kind of broke down a lot of the first, second, third-round type players. How about some sleepers? I know fans always love to hear that. Who's that guy that could be a late-round guy that could be a surprise? Who are yours? Give me one or two, or, you know, who's your top sleeper among the offensive tackles?
Well, I have two guys here. One guy's a legitimate sleeper. The other guy's a deep sleeper. And my sleeper pick is Ja Reed out of UCF. I mean, this guy has a huge wingspan. He's almost 6 feet, 8 inches tall. He bullies people around. He engulfs them with his long arms. He shows tremendous balance in that he doesn't lean into people, so he's got a little bit of technique in him. But, you know, the one thing that he does do is, and maybe because he's so tall, is he does tend to get a little bit high in his stance. He does strictly look like a right tackle, but I think that this guy has the measurables, has the athletic ability, and most of all, he has the strength to be a dominant right tackle at the next level. Again, more of a project, but I like his tools. I love his tools. The other guy is more of a deep sleeper out of South Carolina, Garrett Chisholm. He played at tackle. He played at guard. But I did like him when I saw him play at the tackle position. He can slide and mirror. He did very well in reacting to defenders' moves in the pass rush. He walls off guys in the running game. Now, he did suffer an ACL injury. So, again, he's probably going to get drafted maybe somewhere in the seventh round. Maybe might be a priority free agent because of that injury. He's a JUCO transfer. Again, more of a project, but I love what I saw out of him, and I love his potential.
All right, and to wrap up this offensive tackle position, before we move on to our first guest, I'll just throw a couple sleepers out there that I like. A couple of kids out of the SEC, Lee Zimba from Auburn, moves very well, has got good length. He looked very nimble during that short shuttle that they did there in Indianapolis, a kid with a lot of experience, was a pretty consistent blocker for Auburn. A little bit more of a boomer bust guy is Jarrell King out of South Carolina, 6'5", 36 3/8 arm length, over 88-inch wingspan. That's wow. I mean, that's impressive and moves pretty well for a guy at that size, but was very inconsistent throughout his college career. But, you know, if you grab this kid in the sixth round, you know, who knows? Hey, if you can get a starting tackle in the sixth round or somebody that's got that potential, I think that's a real sleeper there. Chris Harrison out of Clemson, good arm length, a powerful kid, very strong. And then Mike Person, small school player, extremely, extremely athletic, but only 32 3/4-inch arms, which, you know, those are like alligator arms when you're talking about offensive tackles. So he may be a player that will eventually have to move to the guard position. That may be better suited for him. All right, you're listening to the NFL Draft Bibles Offensive Line Preview Show. Another draft digest is going to wrap up all our positional shows. I'm your host, Daniel Moglione. With me is the Reverend Ralph Mancini, as well as one Anthony Cassando, our number one offensive tackle out of Boston College, a four-year starter. Anthony, how's everything going? Thanks for joining us today.
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good, Anthony. Let me ask you, you know, we're, what now, 5 days away from the NFL draft. You're somebody that's projected to go in the first round. What are you thinking? What's going through your mind? Is it more nerves? Is it excitement? Are you wondering what team you're going to go to? What's popping in your head right now?
It's extreme excitement. I mean, I'm so amped up. I can't wait for Thursday. I'm super excited, and I still don't really have any clue who's going to take me. So it's going to be a kind of like a Christmas present almost to like who drafts me. It's going to be fun to figure that out.
Well, I think it'll be a Christmas present for the fans and the teams that draft you, because you're going to be a nice gift for that NFL team moving forward. Anthony, I mean, I don't know if you remember, but we met back in December at the William Campbell thing. I was the guy with the laptop and the mic and everything. And one of the things we talked about was, you know, you look around the room, there's quite a few offensive linemen there, including some other tackles that are projected as potential first-rounders. We're talking about Mike Sherrard from Mississippi State, Nate Soldier from Colorado. I got a two-part question for you. One is, talk a little bit about, you know, how important the intelligence is for an offensive lineman, and is that kind of underrated? And two, what was it like getting to know those guys over a couple of days in New York?
Well, first of all, I think the intelligence factor is really important, not only for picking up the playbook and, you know, that obvious part of it, but also in terms of just figuring out different ways to combat different moves, you know, recognizing how to gain leverage, just reaction things that really come from intelligence, I think is really important. And, you know, it was great getting to know those guys in New York. You know, I became pretty good friends with both those guys, Nate and Derek. They're both real nice guys. You know, we were able to joke around. You know, we have a lot in common, obviously. So, yeah, it was definitely a very fun weekend.
Hey, Anthony, Ralph Mancini here. You know, last time I spoke to you was right before your pro day about a month ago. I know that, you know, during that pro day, you worked up a real sweat with New England Patriots assistant coach Dante Scarnecchia yelling in your ear. You know, tell us about that experience at your pro day.
Yeah, that was great. It was almost like a regular football practice, just without any pads, because they were the coaches were definitely coaching us. It was Coach Scarnecchia and then Coach Flaherty from the Giants as well. And it wasn't just, all right, let's see what you can do. They were actually actively coaching us. So, yeah, that was definitely very fun. Picked up a few things and really took something out of that.
Yeah, and, you know, one of the things that you've been working hard to improve on is your run blocking and your overall hand technique. You know, tell us about the steps that you've taken to address that in the offseason.
I've definitely been working very heavily on lower body strength just to work on that run blocking as well as my anchor in the pass game. And I've also been working a lot on my hip flexibility just so I can, you know, get lower in that run game. And I think those two things put together will really help me. And I've, you know, I've picked up a few things in the Senior Bowl. Playing guard actually kind of helped me figure out some things in the run game of marrying my hips up to the defender and not being so overextended. So I'm just trying to figure out as much as possible, and I think I'm going to be much better at run blocking come next season.
And we're talking to Anthony Cassando from the University of Boston College. I did it again, University of Boston College. It's impossible. It's Boston College. One of the most experienced players in this draft. He was a finalist for the William V. Campbell and the Lowe's Senior Class Award. So, you know, bright kid, great off the field as well. A surefire first-round pick. Potential top 10 pick. Anthony, when you're watching the draft, then when do you think you're going to start kind of getting a little nervous and, hey, my name could be called? You know, you think you might go, you know, 5, 6, 7. Where do you think you're going to start feeling, hey, let me perk my ears up because they may say Anthony Cassando next?
You know, I mean, I'd like to hope I could have my ears perked up as soon as possible, but I still don't really know when it's going to happen, but, you know, last year I actually watched the draft all the way through, and I can't see it being any different this year. I'm sure I'll be glued to that screen basically the entire time. So, because you never know what kind of trade is going to happen or who's going to take you. So it could happen at any time. Like when I get that phone call, so like I said, it's going to be a surprise.
Hey, Anthony, to talk about the fact that there have been so many great offensive linemen that have gone on from Boston College to play in the NFL, you know, guys like Damian Woody, Gazda Cherluis, Pete Kendall, you know, what kind of advice have they given you? I know that you probably had a chance to talk to a number of these guys in the offseason.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still in constant contact with Gazda Cherluis. You know, he just always ingrains into me that you can't accept anything lower than your best, basically. I mean, that's how it was when I came in as a freshman. He kind of let me know that early and often, basically. And I actually got a chance to talk to Pete Kendall. I believe it was last year when he came in. We had an alumni mentoring program at BC, and he came in. You know, he was just talking about, because he was a very long-lived offensive lineman. He had a very long career. He was talking about it's just the guys who are willing to put in the work are the guys that that last. So, I mean, he basically just said you got to continue to work no matter how high you're projected or you know, how well you're doing even in the league. The guys that last are the ones that work.
Anthony, you know, like we said, you're a bright guy. And you know what's going on. So I'd love to pick your brain a little bit here. You matched up against some of the top guys. I know you played against Daquan Bowers the last 2 years. You played against Dante Mock out of Nevada in the bowl game, the Hunger Bowl. And UNC wasn't on your schedule this year anyway, but you did match up against Robert Quinn last season during your junior year. Can you break those guys down a little bit from your perspective?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'll start with Robert Quinn. He kind of sticks out in my head as the guy in my career that I thought was the best guy that I faced. And he had a very quick first step, probably one of the quickest that I've gone against. And he took advantage of mistakes that I made. He was able to use his quickness. He was definitely not afraid to make that inside move if I were to open up my hips too early, or he was able to translate that first quick step into a good speed rush. So he had a lot of different, you know, real explosively quick moves. And then Daquan Bowers is a guy who maybe wasn't as quick on that first step off the line, but once you really didn't want him to get ahead of steam because on contact he was very explosive, whether it's exploding through you with the speed to power or exploding into like a spin move or into like a real quick counter move. He's real explosive on contact. And Dante Moak is kind of in between those two guys. You know, he's got that real quick first step, and he's obviously an extremely quick guy. You can see in his 40. But he brings some power on that speed to power. It's just that he's a little bit smaller than both of those other guys. So he takes that speed and tries to work his speed to kind of get you off balance and tries to turn it into power is what I noticed.
We're talking to Anthony Costanzo from Boston College. Rev, you have anything more for Anthony?
Yeah, I remember last time we spoke, Anthony, you know, we talked about your experience over at the Senior Bowl, and I remember one of the guys that you brought up was Cameron Jordan as one of the guys that stood out during the week, and he's a guy that's, I think, been ascending in the offseason as far as his draft stock is concerned. What impressed you about Cameron Jordan?
He's a real physical player. You know, he's one of those guys who really likes to mix it up, which is big for a defensive end like that. And you know, he was real good with his hands. It was good for that transition going into the NFL because you know, as I've learned, a lot of the stuff in the NFL is about hands and getting leverage. And he's a guy who was able to use his hands really well. So you really had to consistently battle him throughout the entire rep. Because if you kind of lulled at any moment, he could take advantage of it with a quick hands move.
Anthony, I just want to say I didn't mean to shortchange you before when I said, you know, your ears would perk up in the fifth pick. I mean, maybe you go higher than that. I don't just want to throw that out there. Also, I want to ask you, Anthony, I mean, like I said, we spoke in New York, but I hear you're not coming to New York for the draft. You're going to be staying home. So did my fair city, did it not impress you enough?
No, I do like New York. It's just I've had a lot of support from a lot of people throughout my career leading to me to where I've gotten, and I basically want to share that day with as many of those people as I can. So I'm going to, you know, spend that time with my family and friends.
Fair enough. I think that's definitely a good choice there. So what kind of shindig are we going to have here? Is it going to be at your place? Is it going to be at your parents' house? Are you going to rent a place?
Yeah, it's going to be, you know, at my house. I mean, I'll just probably have, you know, the people that are closest to me come. And, yeah, it's going to be a good time, that's for sure.
And one more, you know, have you spoken to, you know, guys from BC that have been in the league, guys that you played with? You know, somebody like a BJ Raji comes to mind, you know, to kind of give you a little bit. Did any of these guys help you throughout this process and give you some insight of what it's like to become an NFL player?
Yeah, I've actually been in contact with Matt Tennant quite a bit, who just got drafted last year. He got drafted in the fifth round last year as our center.
Yep.
Good friend of mine. He kind of just let me know what to expect from the process. And Gazer Sherlock also is a guy that I still am in contact with, and he's been kind of walking me through the process as well. So definitely those guys have helped a bunch and just kind of letting me know what to prepare for.
Yeah, of course. You guys, you old linemen stick together, right?
Oh, absolutely.
And Anthony, as this process moves forward and your focus is on the draft, you know, do you have any thoughts at all to the NFL labor situation and how that's going to impact you moving forward after next week?
You know, I try to think about it as little as possible, just because I really have no say in what goes on. So whether I think about it or not, nothing's really going to change. So I'm just going to continue to go about my business and hope for the best.
All right, Ralph, I'll let you finish off with Anthony and throw him the last question.
Well, Anthony, you know, it's been a long off season. You know, you've been to the Senior Bowl. You've worked out at the Combine. You've had so many visits. Well, what's been the most challenging part of the process?
You know, I still think the most challenging part of it was that first part at the Senior Bowl, just because that was the combination of the physical strain and the mental strain of every. It was the first time that I really got introduced to all of the scouts and coaches, and in terms of the grueling physical part of the practices, it was just kind of everything getting poured on at once. And it's like once I got through that, everything else kind of seemed like a breeze. So that was definitely the most challenging, but also the most rewarding part, I'd say.
All right, Anthony, I really appreciate you giving us this time, just about five days away from the NFL draft. We wish you luck. Hopefully you won't have to wait too long. I don't think you will, and have a great weekend with your friends and family.
All right, thank you very much.
All right, that was Anthony Costanzo, surefire first-round pick, we think top 10 pick come next weekend on the offensive line there. Rev, before we move on to the guards, any final thoughts on Anthony and him as a player and a person?
Well, obviously, you know, we mentioned how intelligent of a person he is. I mean, you won't run into too many football players that are biochemistry majors. I mean, you know, this is a kid who, after his playing career is done, he actually wants to become a doctor and find a cure for cancer. So that just tells you a little bit about, you know, his dedication, his attitude, and his overall intelligence that's going to come in very handy as he enters the NFL. And then the other thing that, and I don't think enough people talk about with Anthony Costanzo is that he's a self-made player. You know, coming out of high school, I mean, this guy was a beanpole. He was like 6'7", 220 pounds. He had to go to a military academy to sort of get himself, you know, ready for the collegiate game, to play with a big program like Boston College. And he didn't even receive a scholarship, which is hard to believe. It's mind-boggling how an athlete of that caliber didn't even get a scholarship when he entered college. And so, you know, you take all of those factors into consideration. We talked about his skills and his size, but when you talk about the intangibles, I mean, this guy has so much to offer.
All right, you're listening to the NFL Draft Bibles Draft Digest Offensive Line Preview Show, and it's time to shift inside to the offensive guard position, and Reverend Mike Pouncey, the kind of the top-notch, the elite interior lineman in this draft. Some people think he's a center. We have him projected as a guard. How high do you think he should go? I mean, I've seen some people have him in their top 15, other people later in the first round. Where do you think a team should pull the trigger on a Mike Pouncey?
I think he's probably going to go probably like in the late first or early second round. I'm hearing that the Pittsburgh Steelers would just, well, they'll just pounce on him. Pardon the pun, but if he's there, I think they will take him and pair him up with his brother. But it, again, if he doesn't go in that late first round, I can definitely see him going in the second round.
Yeah, I don't see any way, Rev, that he slips into the second round. I think maybe, you know, projections going into the top 15, top 20 might be a little high. I don't think he's going to be as good of a pro as his brother, but I think the fact that, you know, his brother did do so well, so many teams need interior linemen in this draft, particularly, you know, I think the versatility of him maybe being a center, maybe being a guard plays in his favor. What are your thoughts on that, and do you think he could be as good as his brother?
I think he can be as good as his brother. A lot of people seem to think so, maybe even a little bit better down the road. But, I mean, they're very similar. You know, as far as him playing guard or center, I think at least initially I would put him at the center. At the guard position, excuse me, because, you know, he did play center in his last year over with the Gators, and he had a lot of issues snapping the ball. Especially when it comes to a lot of those formations, those shotgun formations. So I would be very hesitant to lining him up at the center position, at least in his first year. So right now, ideally, I would see him, I would draft him as being a guard. I would line him up as a guard as opposed to being a center.
All right. And Rev, you know, as I said, he's pretty much the consensus number one guy at that position. So who's your number two guard in this draft?
My number two guy is a guy that's going to be coming up in a few minutes, and that's John Moffitt out of Wisconsin. He's just a fantastic run blocker who gets on the move. He opens holes by pancaking the opposition. He can get out to the second level to block those linebackers and those safeties. He just keeps moving his feet all the time. He plays to the whistle. He can block huge nose tackles one-on-one. He's very versatile in that he could play center. He could play guard. There's really not much not to like about John Moffitt.
It's hard to argue with Moffitt. I'm a big fan of his game, but I'm actually going to go with Danny Watkins out of Baylor. Now, the age is a concern there because he's going to be a lot older than most of these other guys, but 6'3", 310 pounds, moves well for a kid at that size. Obviously, he played tackle at the college level, so that kind of speaks to his agility and lateral quickness. Usually, those guys transition very well to the guard position. Strong kid, very powerful. Something that a lot of these guys, people question is, do they have a mean streak? Are they tough enough? Are they physical enough? Are they nasty enough? None of those questions come with Danny Watkins. That's not a concern at all. He's got a very strong base. As I said, powerful blocker. He moves well. He shows the ability that he can pull. So I think he's somebody that can be a very, very good interior blocker at the next level. If he was younger, I'd be tempted to make him my number one guard, but the fact that he's already in his mid-20s is somewhat of a concern in terms of, you know, was he dominant at the college level because he's more physically developed? And also, you know, it's just, you know, how long are you going to have him in terms of an NFL career? But I think he could be a guy that could be an instant impact player there. Rev, you know, we talked about, you know, the top guy. We both threw out our number two guys. Who's part of that next tier? Who are the best of the rest at the offensive guard position, in your opinion?
You know, one guy who really impressed me was David Arkin at 6'5", 302 pounds out of Missouri State. He played a lot of tackle in college. Actually, he played exclusively at tackle in college. And he was also one of the most outstanding players at the East-West Shrine Game, where, you know, he ran with excellent balance as a pole blocker. He did get out to the second level. He flashed a lot of his power, and a couple of times he even buried his man. You know, if he works on his technique a little bit and on his knee bend a bit more, I think he could be a really, really good run blocker, a good lead blocker, a guy that you can get out on one of those traps and pulls. David Arkin, to me, I think is one of the more underrated players in this draft. Another guy that I like, and I've watched him for a number of years now out of the University of Connecticut, is Zach Hurd. He's just a hulking 6'7", 323-pound monster who's not only stout enough to hold up defensive linemen and pass protection, but he could also block on the move. He has the strength to wipe out multiple defenders on pull blocks, and he really has great feet for a man of his dimensions. And then, finally, I also like, out of the Big Ten, Justin Boren out of Ohio State, a very quick player with the way he fires off the snap. He uses a powerful punch to shock his adversary, maintains good leverage at all times. You know, he's not going to get beat by any of those fancy pass rush or spin moves. Yeah, he's a little stiff, not the greatest athlete out there, but he's extremely competitive, and he's going to work hard to overcome any deficiency. So, again, I'm going to go with Arkin, Zach Hurd, and Justin Boren here.
Not bad choices there, Rev. I'm going to go with Clint Bowling from the University of Georgia, who, like Danny Watkins, is a converted tackle here. Although he does have experience playing guard, this kid pretty much played up and down the offensive line at the University of Georgia, which speaks to his intelligence and his understanding of playing offensive line. He moves very well, as you would expect, somebody that played a lot of left tackle in the SEC. He also has great length, strong 28 bench press, impressive feet. He can get to the second level and block those linebackers if that's what you're looking for. Probably going to be a better zone blocker. He's not going to be one of those intimidating, mauling type of guys. It seems like that, Rev, to me, that seems like a big theme with a lot of these guys, both at the tackle position and the guard position. As college goes to more of the spread offense and more of a passing game, it seems like most of these players are stronger in pass protection, and there's not many of those physical tough guys.
Yeah, and, you know, I think especially if you're going to play the guard position, you have to be a good run blocker. You know, I think it's a premium. I think it's imperative that these guys play against the run a little bit better at the guard position, because you don't have to be as athletic. You're more of a phone booth type of player, and so you just have to be able to be quick off the snap, just get underneath guys' pads, and just drive them back. I mean, if you can't do that at the guard position in the NFL, you're pretty much going to be useless.
All right, Rev, how about some sleepers at the guard position? I know we touched upon this at the tackle. How about at the guard? Who are some players that are sleepers to you that could be nabbed late in the draft or maybe even priority free agents that you think have a chance to contribute at the next level?
Well, you know, three guys jump out at me. I'm going to start off with, out of Utah, Caleb Schauerdorf. Week in and week out, this guy was the most consistent lineman on his team. He's a very mobile guy. He picks up blitzers. He can pull and drive guys off the ball. He also has some experience at the tackle position, so he can hold his own in pass protection if he needs to. And then another guy, interesting guy out of Hawaii, Laupepa Lutuli, a thick kid at 6'3", 325 pounds. He can bend his knees, has a nice jolting punch. He stays on his blocks. Again, he's more of a phone booth type guy. He's not very agile, but, you know, you talked about guys being strong in the running game. Well, this is what this guy is. He's a drive blocker, a big guy. And then finally, out of the University of Iowa, I also like Julian Vander Velde, a guy who's underrated. Not too many people talk about him, but every time I've seen him, he never disappointed me. I think, you know, this kid is a real Renaissance man. He speaks three different languages. He played on both sides of the ball in high school, played baseball. He wrestled. He was a shot putter. But the bottom line with him is that he's an extremely thick guy. He's got a strong lower body. He plays with great balance, and he specializes in sealing off running lanes. So those are my three guys right there.
Yeah, the last kid out of Iowa is a really interesting kid. As you said, Renaissance kind of man, singer, played Little League baseball. So really a well-rounded, all-around kid. And actually, you can read a Q&A that our guy Chris Kresge did with him a couple weeks ago, as well as with Iowa's Jeff Tarpanian, the linebacker. But that Q&A was really an intriguing one. I got a few sleepers myself there, Rev, at the offensive line position, including a big tenor in Stephen Schilling. Another kid that moved, started his career as left tackle, a little bit of a disappointment throughout his college career. I mean, he came in very hyped up, was supposed to be the next, you know, big-time left tackle at Michigan, didn't really pan out, but moved inside and kind of found a home there. He's still better in pass protection, I think, than as a run blocker, and is better suited to his own scheme than a man-to-man. Not a physical guy, but moves very well, knows how to position himself. I think a small school player, William Rackey, is a pretty impressive prospect as well. Very good balance and footwork, strong upper body, and he handled himself well. Rackey did well at the East-West Shrine game when the competition stepped up. LaMarcus Love is a really intriguing kid out of Arkansas. A lot of potential here. He's got the footwork, the quickness, the size out of that some teams would like in a left tackle, but he's just so raw. He needs a lot of work in his technique. You know, he's a kid that always protected Ryan Mallett's, not that he always protected his blind side, but he always had one-on-one. The tight end was always on the other side. So whatever side the tight end was, Love was on the other side. He never had that help. But like I said, very raw, disappointing senior season. That's why he moves from being one of the top tackles to now a sleeper at the guard position. Andrew Jackson out of Fresno State is an instinctive player. He picks up blitz as well, but he needs to, like Schilling, he needs to improve on his run blocking. And then finally, Kilgore, another small school kid, very athletic, moves very well, a little bit undersized, though. That's the knock on Mr. Kilgore. And as we're wrapping up the offensive guards, perfect timing, our man John Moffitt from the University of Wisconsin is on the line. And here is somebody that definitely doesn't need to work on his run blocking. He is among the best in all of college football as a run blocker and the best in his draft. John, it's a pleasure to have you on. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure, John. And I've had fun over the years watching the Wisconsin Badgers play old-fashioned, old-school football while everyone else in the country, even the Ohio State and Michigan going to spread offense, you guys still play Big Ten football. What does it mean to play offensive line for the Wisconsin Badgers?
Well, you know, I think we have a great tradition of linemen coming out of Wisconsin. And, you know, I personally love the way we play football. And, you know, we don't pass as much, but it's definitely a pro-style offense. I really enjoy playing there, and I think it really made me, the kind of lineman I am today.
Well, John was an AP All-American last season, a consensus first-team All-Big Ten performer. And John, you know, talk to me a little bit about your experience playing on the interior. You know, you've started multiple games at left guard as well as center. You know, where do you think you're going to end up playing at the next level, and how much do you think that helps your draft stock, that versatility?
Well, you know, I think versatility definitely helps at any position at the next level. So, you know, that's a benefit. I got a lot of experience. I think I had 15 starts at center and 25 or 26 at left guard. It made a difference in my game and really helped me grow as a lineman as a result. And kind of some of it was a result of injuries and just being moved around. But the next level, I'm not sure I'll play wherever needed. And I really enjoy both positions. I think I'm partial to center, but wherever if I need to play right guard, I'll play right guard. If I need to play left or center, you know, I'm ready. I just want to play, you know.
Hey, John, Ralph Mancini here. You know, we all know the type of physical and intense player you are on the field, but, you know, tell us about, you know, your time at Wisconsin when you constantly prepared from a mental aspect. You know, talk about that mental side of the game where you were reading defenses before exploding out of your stance. Talk to us about, you know, how that's going to help you down the road in the NFL.
Yeah, you know, I think the one of the best things about going to Wisconsin, they really did teach us the game. And, you know, being a pro-style offense, we did learn a lot about things that transition over the next level. And, you know, they taught us a lot of defensive recognition because it kind of went along with our schemes and how we ran our offense. So a lot of it was mental. We did a lot of film work, you know, pretty much every night and really focused on, you know, getting to know how a defense works every week. And so I think that definitely helped, and it helped me to learn that the game is, you know, just as much mental as it is physical.
Yeah, and, you know, for a guy who's 320 pounds, you have pretty good lateral agility. What do you think, what part of your game do you think people don't talk enough about?
You know, I think everyone likes run blocking, everything like that. I think my pulling is pretty good, too, though. And I pulled a lot more my junior year because our senior year we really were having a lot of success with our zone game and less with our power, and we still had successful power, but not as prevalent as our junior, so we got away from it a little bit. But I think the pulling aspect and getting around a guard or getting around a tackle and trapping someone, I think is a part of my game that maybe doesn't get enough recognition.
Hey, John, you know, everybody knows that the Big Ten, you know, consistently produces a lot of great players on the interior on both sides of the ball, and this year in particular has a ton of studs coming out of that defensive line position. Now, I know some of those guys are ends, and maybe you didn't match up with them in the games, but can you tell us a little bit about some of the guys that maybe were the toughest matchups from this past year, or maybe guys that impressed you?
Well, I think just starting at home, I think the first guy is JJ, JJ Watt, and he's just, you know, a total package guy and just a really good athlete, hard worker, and has a lot of talent. And, you know, I think he'll definitely play for a long time. You know, obviously this is coming from a college kid, so take my opinion with a grain of salt, but, you know, he was among the best that I've seen in college at the defensive end position and really had the ability to dominate a whole side of the line of scrimmage. Moving on from that, I think Claiborne, really impressed. I know I talked to Gabe, and he said Claiborne was a handful. My left tackle, Gabe Creamy, said Claiborne was a real handful. And Kerrigan also. I was really impressed with Kerrigan at the Senior Bowl, and I thought he really played at a high level. And just looking at him, he's very lean and very quick guy, and I like the way he plays.
And we're talking to John Moffitt from the University of Wisconsin, one of the top interior linemen in this draft.
Hey, John, you know, a couple of people actually talked to me about J.J. Watt. You're not the first one, but getting back to you for a second, you were a team captain with lots of experience versus top competition. What do you think you offer an NFL team in terms of your character and your leadership skills?
I think I understand how to lead a team. I think leadership takes time too. I don't expect to walk into a locker room and have the respect of a group of, you know, late 20s, early 30-year-old men who've been doing it for a lot longer than I have. You know, I think the way you earn that is you take care of your job on the field, and you learn the game and you learn the ropes, and then later down the line you can become like a locker room guy or a leader. And I think the first thing about leadership is just gaining everyone's respect. So I definitely think I bring that to the table. But, you know, the thing that I'm most concerned about that I want is to play immediately. I want to contribute immediately. And I think I have the ability to do that.
Hey, John, we talked about you having the ability to play both positions. I mean, other than the obvious, which is snapping the football, what's the biggest difference when you play center as opposed to guard?
In our offense, the center made all the line calls, and you know he made the declaration. He declared the mic, and then from there he would make the line shifts and the blocking assignments and such. So the mental burden was a lot heavier on the center as opposed to playing left guard.
Yeah, I could definitely imagine that being a difference there, right there, a key thing, a key component. And you brought up Gabe Creamy, your teammate at left tackle. Tell us a little bit about what's he like, you know, somebody that you've started with on that offensive line for the last couple of years.
I played next to Gabe for a long time, and I think he's a guy that's always improving and always getting better. And you know, I personally think he's definitely one of the top tackles in the draft, if not the best tackle. You know, he's just, he's an excellent run blocker, and, I think he's going to be a good player at the next level. I just always respect and admire the way that he constantly worked. He knew what his weaknesses are, and he worked on them and continuously got better, which I always, really admired in Gabe's, game.
We're talking to John Moffitt, Big Ten product out of the University of Wisconsin, kind of an offensive line factory when it comes to producing NFL players. Ralph, you got anything more for John?
Yeah, basically, John, you know, nobody ever questioned your physical strength. You were a state champion weightlifter in high school. You know, tell us why you'll be able to compete for a starting job in the NFL right off the bat.
I'm a little bit older. I'm 24 right now, and you know, I've had a history of playing right away. I started as a freshman, my redshirt year in college, and I believe I'm the most ready to play in this draft as far as interior linemen go. I understand the game. I think my game intelligence is where it needs to be, just from playing at Wisconsin, and I think physically I'm strong enough. I think the next step for me is becoming a better technician, becoming an NFL technician, because I think everybody is, you know, strong. I don't think that's what it's all about.
All right, John, before we let you go, give us a little insight into your psyche right now, just 5 days away from the NFL draft. Where's your mindset at?
You know, I'm just waiting and just letting things play out. I can't control anything else, and I did whatever I could do. And so right now it's just up to me to just wait and be patient. And, you know, I've been working out and staying in shape, just being ready to go wherever I need to go if the lockout ends. And that's kind of where I'm at right now.
And where are you going to be spending next weekend? What are your plans for the draft?
I'm from Connecticut, but my grandmother lives in New Jersey, so I was going to go down to her house and just spend it with my family and relax and just keep it really low-key.
You're going to grandma's house, so there's got to be a favorite dish there that you love that grandma makes, no?
Yeah, my aunt makes a lot of good Italian food, so I'll probably just eat that, maybe some chicken parm or something.
Wow, that's a man after my own heart, some great chicken parm.
Yeah.
Every time I go to
a
restaurant, I look at the menu for like 5 minutes, and then my wife looks at me and goes, chicken parm, right?
Yeah, it's the best. So,
I can't go wrong there, John. Thanks a lot for joining us and giving us some time, and we want to wish you all the best next week.
No problem. Thanks a lot, guys.
All right, best of luck.
All right, take care.
All right, John Moffitt, another, you know, great interview, smart kid, bright kid. Seems like all these offensive linemen are. The more you talk to them, the more you realize these are some of the smartest guys on the football field. What are your final thoughts on Moffitt and Ralph and moving on to the next level?
Hey, you know what? I mean, John Moffitt, I mean, he's the complete package as a guard. He gives you all the strength. He gives you the experience. As he mentioned, he's a little bit older. He's mature. But the thing about these offensive linemen that impresses me, especially with Costanzo and Moffitt, is that, you know, they're not these, you know, these big shot guys, you know, even though they're as good as they are, you know, they'll acknowledge their deficiencies. They're always talking about things that they need to improve on. And, you know, it's that type of maturity, I think, that's going to take them far at the next level.
All right, you're listening to the NFL Draft Bible's Draft Digest show, the offensive line preview show. We've already broken down the offensive tackles, which included a visit from Anthony Costanzo, maybe the number one offensive tackle in this draft, maybe a top 10 pick. Moved on to the guards. John Moffitt was just on with us. Now we go right to the middle, and we're talking centers to wrap up the offensive line here. And, Ralph, let's start at the top. You know, who do you like here as your top center in this draft? Is it the Nittany Lions, Steven Wisniewski, the kid with the pedigree, or is it Florida State's Rodney Hudson, who's been, you know, an all-ACC player basically since his freshman season?
Actually, I love both of these guys, and it was very tough to pick one. But, I mean, I guess I'm going to go with Wisniewski here. He's a very smart guy with tremendous instincts. He reacts well to the blitz. And he's really fun to watch as a run blocker, where he can get out in space and just obliterate defenders with great leverage, strength, flawless hand technique. He always finishes his blocks. And, you know, let's face it, you know, a big reason why Evan Royster is Penn State's all-time leading rusher is because of Wisniewski. It's not like Penn State had, some great guys surrounding him on that offensive line. I mean, I watched every game this past season, and I've watched him for a number of years. And especially during the early part of the season, a lot of those components of that offensive line, they just, you know, they weren't playing well. But Wisniewski was that one guy who was consistently good week in and week out. I think that this guy can do well in a zone blocking scheme. He could play on the move. And the other thing about him is he has outstanding bloodlines. Both his dad, Leo, played for Penn State, and his uncle, Steve Wisniewski, we all remember him as an Oakland Raider. And so I think that this guy, I think he's the complete package at the center position. Rodney Hudson, he's not as big, a bit undersized to play the guard position, so obviously he's going to be moved over to center, I think. He's technically very sound, you know. He doesn't engulf guys with his frame. He just gets a firm grip on you, and once he latches on, he's not going to let go. As a matter of fact, I believe throughout his college career, correct me if I'm wrong, I think he only allowed like one sack throughout his college career, so he was very, very productive. And, you know, he does play with great balance. He's a versatile guy. But I'm going to go with Wisniewski over Hudson. But I really like both guys, though.
Yeah, Hudson has been, you know, for a college career, as productive as an interior lineman as I can say I've seen in the last 10, 15 years. But at the same time, I got to go with Wisniewski myself. Kid knows how to play assignment football. He knows how to read defenses. He knows how to do what John Moffitt just spoke about, make those line calls and figure out what's going on, kind of diagnosing the defense. He's a technician, which shouldn't be a surprise considering the bloodlines. He knows how to use his hands well. He takes good angles when he's on the move. You know, you talk a lot about that with linebackers taking a good angle to the running back. He takes good angles to the linebackers when he needs to block those guys. While he's not very strong, he is a physical player. He doesn't shy away from contact. But as I said, he isn't very strong, and at times he can get overpowered, which, as Ralph mentioned, you know, probably better suited to being a zone blocker. And I think the same could be said from Hudson. I think these guys are both kind of similar player. Hudson is also excellent instincts, great technician, outstanding intangibles, off the charts, great kid, good character, smart player, excellent awareness, but like Wisniewski, can get overpowered from time to time. He's even more undersized than Steven is, you know, good 15 pounds or so lighter than Wisniewski, who's at, you know, over 310 pounds. Hudson hasn't reached 300 yet, and he's put on some weight since his college career. So I think similar type players, both probably in that second round range. Rev, would you agree with that assessment?
Well, I mean, you know, a few months ago, I even thought Wisniewski could have been a late first round pick, but I don't think there's going to be enough room for him. You know, there are a lot of teams out there with a lot of other needs. So, but I definitely see him being a second rounder at this point. And the same goes for Hudson as well.
Yeah, and both of them, as a lot of the guards who have experience playing center, these two centers, Wisniewski played some guard while at Penn State, you know, when they had DJ, what was the center's name there? A couple years ago.
Who is this again?
I forgot. Wisniewski played guard as a sophomore, because Penn State had a pretty good center that year, 2 years ago. So he's got experience playing guard. And then you have Hudson, who pretty much played his whole career at guard. So these guys do offer that versatility. Rev, who's your best of the rest? Who's the next couple of guards and centers, I should say, in your estimation?
Well, I'm going to go with Tim Barnes here from Missouri, a guy who's very light on his feet. He can pull and he can trap lock. He was a standout during the Texas versus the Nation game. He's not the most athletic guy, but he's a technician who maintains good leverage and a firm grip on the opposition. Another guy that I like out of Oregon State is Alex Linkenhall, a guy that plays with a solid base. He's great at knowing what angles to take when he's engaging with defenders. He's a real team leader who organized a lot of the team's workouts. He moves very well. The one thing about him, though, that might discourage people into about drafting him is his short arms. He needs to use his hands a little bit better as well, but overall I like him as well. And then another guy that stands out to me is James Kirkpatrick out of TCU. Here's a guy who could line up at the guard, at the center position. He could play some guard as well, but I think obviously he played most times at the center position, did a great job in the Senior Bowl. He flashes good hip movement in controlling defenders. He finishes his blocks. He's just an all-around high-effort grinder.
All right, Rev, I'm going to steal one of your sleepers as one of my best at the rest. I got as my third-best center here the small school player Brandon Fuscow out of Slippery Rock. Tremendous balance. He can handle the bull rush. The only concern with him is, will he be able to handle those elite, quick interior tackles that are so rare and that pretty much only exist in the NFL? I mean, you can go through a whole college career, even playing in the SEC or Big Ten, and not face up with an elite, quick interior lineman. So Fuscow's going to have to make that big jump, but he's got pretty good size at 6 feet 4 inches and 306 pounds. His arm length is over 33 inches, which is one of the better among the centers. I think he had the biggest wingspan among the centers at the combine, and he moves extremely, extremely well, shifts his feet well. So I think he's got the potential to improve on that and become an all-around blocker. And then I go with Christopher O'Dowd from USC, kind of the other end of the spectrum, not the most physically gifted kid, but very instinctive, a great technician, has outstanding vision, sees what's going on in front of him, knows how to help his teammates next to him when they need help, probably a better zone blocker, but he's another player that can struggle against superior athletes, whether it's, you know, a big nose tackle that can overpower him or that elite quick pass rusher. That's where Adoud is going to have his trouble. So I think he's going to be a solid starter at the next level, but may need help when he gets matched up against an elite guy, which, you know, hey, happens a lot at the next level. Rev, how about your sleepers? Who are, I know I stole one from you in Fuscal. Who else do you have as a sleeper from the center position?
Well, I'm not going to talk too much about Fusco, although I love the fact that, you know, he's a smart kid. He handles all the line calls, and he was honored with the Division II Remington Award and also named the Gene Upshaw Division II Lineman of the Year. So that's very, very high praise indeed for Mr. Fusco. The other guys that I like as my deep sleepers, I like Zane Taylor out of Utah, a fiery kid. He plays with a nasty streak. He's got good, strong hands. He's a smart kid, a vocal leader. And another deep sleeper that I like here is John Genoto out of UNLV, a tough kid. He's going to thrive in a power running attack. He has the size to play guard as well. And overall, he's just a great character guy.
All right, I got three more for you. And one of them is Mr. Ryan Bartholomew out of the University of Syracuse, 302-pounder, powerful kid. He had a 34 bench press, the top among the centers there. Very, very strong base. He's an impressive athlete, but out of this group, he's pretty raw. You know what I mean? O'Dowd was a kid that's a technician that isn't that impressive physically. Bartholomew is very impressive physically, strength, good athlete, but he needs work on his technique. Another Big East player, Jason Kelce out of Cincinnati, one of the more athletic linemen in this draft, ran a 4.14 in the 20-yard shuttle. I mean, it looked like a DB out there at times, but at only 280 pounds, he's obviously going to have to put on weight if he's going to break into a starting lineup. And then finally, Zach Williams out of Washington State, big kid, 310-pounder, who can be a physical dominant run blocker. I think that's where he brings value. This is not a draft that has a ton of players that can be dominant run blockers. That's something that he did well for the Cougars at Washington State there in the Pac-10. Ralph, I think we broke down this position pretty well, from tackles to center to guards. If you're just joining us now, we're wrapping up the show. But go back, go to the archives, listen to it. We had Anthony Costanzo on from Boston College. I'd like to thank him, as well as Sean Moffitt from Wisconsin. And, folks, you know, you got some off days there. You got some sick days that you haven't used. Maybe your company doesn't let you carry them over. I suggest you take those days this week if you're a draft nick and want to prepare. We have 32 on-the-clock shows that feature beat writers for all the teams with some players sprinkled in, breaking down each team as they prepare for the NFL draft. This is another Draft Digest show breaking down the position. We've done every position, quarterback, running back, spoken to guys like Tawan Jones, wide receiver show. We had Jonathan Smith on, tight ends. We broke it down with Virgil Green, the high riser from Nevada. On the defensive side of the ball, D-line, linebacker, and DB shows with guys like Prince Amakamura, first-round pick, Raheem Moore, one of the best safeties, if not the best safety in this draft, Dante Moak, and Colin McCarthy, a pair of mid-round sleepers that could make an impact at the next level, as well as first-round picks in Cameron Hayward and Corey Legit along the defensive line. Also, check out our Football Friday extravaganza. It's part one, part two last night. It was my man Reverend as well as Rick Saratella in the house when we spoke to guys like Charles Davis from the NFL Network that gave us great insight, as well as the man Nick Fairley, in my opinion, should be a lock top 10 pick, as well as Greg McElroy, who gave us some insight to playing quarterback at the University of Alabama. Rev, it's been great. It's been a fun ride doing all these Draft Digest shows with you, breaking down all the position. Do you have any final thoughts here before we close out the offensive line show?
None in particular, except the fact that, you know, there are a lot of teams out there that are going to be looking for offensive linemen, whether it be at tackle, whether it be at guard, whether it be at center. So, you know, although you might not see a lot of those guard and center types being taken in the first round, you better believe they're going to be taken in the lower rounds because, again, this is a position where guys get hurt, guys get old, and there are a lot of teams out there with a lot of needs at these positions.
All right, folks, it's been a pleasure. I hope you've been with us for all these shows. If you haven't, get into the All Access Football archives on Blog Talk Radio and check out all those shows on the clock, Draft Digest, Football Friday extravaganzas. I think our player spotlights are up to about 250 right now with a lot of premier players as well as a lot of sleepers, guys that you got to, you know, go and find them in the little nooks and corners and the crevices, which our Bo Marchant does such a good job of. Check those out. Keep with us moving forward as we have our Draft Digest show on Thursday as we preview the first round. We're going to have a primetime special on Friday, and then Rick Saratella on Saturday from Radio City Saturday morning will be reviewing the first 2 days and previewing day three of the draft. I'm your host, Daniel Moguillon. Be with us again on Thursday.
Ladies and gentlemen, let's get ready to rumble!
Simply, wait.